Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Glory Glory Man United podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kyle Quinn. And joining me today is my regular co-host, Rishi. How's it going, mate?
Seen better days, Carl. Seen better days. But I feel like it's a bit of deja vu, isn't it? We have these days more often than we don't these days.
It's Groundhog Day. It's just like the Brentford game in many ways, where a draw that felt like a defeat. But United were very lucky to get. It was an absolutely diabolical display from United from start to finish. So disjointed. I mean, if you look at when there was a United player about 40 yards from Bournemouth's goal, looking up to pick somebody out, and every single white shirt was static. And you're like, what the hell are they doing? What have they been working on in training? So many issues with this United team. I mean, Rashford with another abysmal display. Casemiro was a hologram in the middle of the pitch. Diogo Dalot was a disaster at right back. Onana was beaten twice at his near post. Where do you even start, Brush?
And then you've not even mentioned all of the calamities. Last week I had a lot of praise for Kamboala, the young man coming in and did a great job against Liverpool. But then with young players, how many times have we mentioned it? You're going to get inconsistencies, and he had an absolute mare yesterday, a game to forget. In the first goal, again, calamitous in all areas of the pitch, from Garnacho not tracking back to the legs of Casemiro gone, to the lack of communication as well. Dalot's wandering about, dilly-dallying, and Kamboala gets caught out as well. And then, like you say, yeah, keeper getting beaten at the near post. We were absolutely ran through. We probably should have been a couple of goals down in that first half. They went close, Sinistra. And one of the other guys were really close as well, just going wide of the bar. Our first goal as well, I thought there potentially was a foul in the build-up to the goal, so that was somewhat fortunate. Second one, obviously a penalty, so lack of creativity. Rashford again, senior player, not really getting involved. Rasmus Højlund, bless him, didn't get a sniff. It's just not good enough, is it? It's not
I
good
think
enough.
there was a Bournemouth first half sub. I think it was Lloyd Kelly, who had a header on goal from a rebound, and four United players stood watching him as he headed it towards goal in the 6 yard area. So nobody challenged him; they all just watched him. Exactly the same as Cole Palmer's winner against United. They're all pointing to go out to him, and nobody does, and he gets a free shot on goal. It's just an absolute calamity. I don't want to go in on Willie Kamboala, because he's a very young player. It's only his third start in the Premier League. He's going to have his inconsistencies, and the slip for Solanke's goal was very unfortunate. It could have happened to anyone, really. His performance was nearly compounded when he appeared to give away a penalty at the end, but was then changed by VAR to a free kick outside the area. Because it's Man United, then everybody apart from United fans thinks it was a penalty. I'm really not sure. It's a tough one for the referee. I actually thought the referee was pretty poor on the day. I've never heard of this referee, and he was getting a lot of the minor decisions wrong, like corners and free kicks and throw-ins. He's getting them to the wrong team. He just seemed like a guy he
At
was
first
totally out of
glance,
his
though,
depth, to be honest.
at first glance, though, Carl, I did think, oh no, when he pointed to the spot, I thought it was a pen. I thought, and then it was only on the replay. And yeah, thank goodness for VAR. And also with where the cameras are positioned at that stadium, you can hear the background noise of the Bournemouth fans going mental as well, adding to it.
Yeah, they thought they had a penalty kick to win the game. And the way things have been going for United recently, where they're conceding a lot of late goals, conceding late penalties, I thought this was going to be another one. But we got away with it there by the skin of our teeth. And to be honest, I don't think we even deserved a draw. They were, but I predicted this before the game. I told everybody, probably including yourself, that I think United
You'd
were going to
actually
lose this
message
game
me
hard.
saying it's going to be a tough game, yeah.
Yeah, I think I said somebody else. I think they'll lose, and I think I was being diplomatic when I said tough game. I generally thought United would get beat in this match because Bournemouth have been playing really well under this new coach. They were unbeaten in the month of March. Okay, they lost to Luton last week, but I thought being at home to United, they'll be up for it. Even what Solanke was saying after after the game was very kind of disrespectful towards United. He says, we love to beat Man United, he says, and we're disappointed with the draw. So they don't even respect us anymore. They actually expect to win when they play us. Of course, they won quite comfortably at Old Trafford. It was 3-0 officially, but they had the ball at the back of the net again and was ruled out quite harshly. So that should have been 4-0, really. So they've got 4 points off United this season, which is abysmal. Imagine getting the double done over here by Bournemouth. We're very, very close to that. That's the situation we're in. And Manchester United have now won one of their last 7 Premier League matches. That's relegation form. Difficult to see Ten Hag surviving this push, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not looking good at the moment. You know, what can we really say? The manner of the performance, the fact that we don't even look good, all the statistics being broken for the wrong reasons. I think I saw a stat yesterday on Match of the Day. Only Luton have conceded more shots for the season. I think it was something like 574 shots we've had. And only Luton were ahead on 576. Like, we shouldn't even be in those conversations, you know? It's ridiculous.
Conceded another 20 shots yesterday. Just the 20 this time, not 30.
Yeah, just the 20, yeah. Like, look at these numbers. What are these numbers? Like, shouldn't be happening. I understand. I give the manager a bit more leeway than others when it comes to the injuries and things that he's had to deal with this season. But, you know, there's stubbornness and naivety. Like, it's got to end, surely. Surely you've got to shore things up and change things about and work with what you have. If you don't have the ingredients, you know, to do what you want to do, just adapt, because ultimately it's a results-based industry, isn't it? So I think if he loses his job, it will be his stubbornness that leads him there.
I don't know if you saw the clip from Dutch television from a few years ago when Ten Hag is discussing his tactics with Ruud Gullit, and Ruud Gullit is asking him, why are you pushing the midfield up so high? Why don't you have a player in there controlling the midfield? And Ten Hag says that it's worth the risk and this is the way he plays. And this is exactly what he's doing at the moment at Manchester United. So to me, what he's doing right now is exactly what he wants to do, because that's what he did at Ajax. So regardless of who we sign in the summer, we're going to continue to play the same way. So this is what makes me lose faith in the manager. You had Ruud Gullit openly questioning his tactics at Ajax, and obviously it worked to a large extent in the Eredivisie, but it's not working in the Premier League. You cannot have your midfield as wide open as that.
Yeah, it's a different ball game altogether, isn't it, from the Eredivisie to the Premier League. You have to be adaptable.
Yeah, I think if anything, last season he was adaptable. Now what he's doing this season is the way that he wants to play, and it's not working. He should go back to the way he played last season, and we might get more results.
You know, what he did last season is saying, the only. Yeah. Sorry, I was just going to say what he did last season is the only bit of hope, glimmer of hope that I have. So we know he's capable of playing a different style of football. For what reason he's changed it up this year, I don't know. Obviously, injuries and other things have impacted it as well. But yeah, what he's done last season is the only thing giving me hope.
Yeah, he adopted and said to work with what he played to. You play to, you don't, in my opinion, you don't go with your philosophy if you don't have the resources to do it. You play to the player's strengths, the ones that you have. You play to their strengths. And I felt as if he was doing that last season. And this season, he's playing the way he did at Ajax to a large extent, and is being stubborn about it. And even when it comes to team selections, regardless of how poorly they play in the previous match, he makes minimum amount of changes. I mean, even yesterday was an unchanged side, which for me was totally unjustified given the previous performances. And some players in particular have not been playing well at all, Rashford and Casemiro being obvious examples. And he doesn't make a change. I mean, I want to see Mason Mount start now. He's had a number of cameo appearances, been really good in most of those. Ahmad came on as a half-time sub yesterday, and I want to see more of him. I think he deserves a chance. Rashford, I think we've talked about it many times, that his attitude has been so poor this season, and again yesterday, doesn't look like he wants to be there. You know, his fanboys always point to like one time in a game where he tracked back because he lost the ball. But for most of the games, he just doesn't try it at all. And we need to be looking at somebody else. It's possible that Anthony would have started yesterday, only he was missing as well. But Ahmad definitely deserves a chance over Rashford, I believe. And, you know, I know Mason Mount isn't a like-for-like chain for Casemiro, but this midfield is unbalanced anyway. And Mason Mount would at least offer some tenacity and some, you know, mobility and pace, whereas Casemiro, people just walk past him now, and he seems like he's afraid to get into a sprint in case he pulls a muscle. And you see yesterday where there was a Bournemouth counter-attack, and he just flew into a challenge, didn't make contact with the player or the ball, and was just then totally out of the play. He just looks like a shadow of his former self.
Yeah, and some of the movement as well. It seems half-hearted as well, doesn't he, at times? Where he's just going through the motions and not fully committing to anything.
I find it hard to believe that that's because he doesn't care, because that's not the way he's been throughout his career. I think it's because it's a psychological issue because of the injuries that he's had this season, that now he's afraid to pull a muscle. So, but how useless is that for Manchester United, that you've got your one of your most important midfield players and he's just totally inadequate, and he's not moving correctly, and he's so off the pace, he's afraid to break into a sprint. And you're like, even though Mason Mount does not offer you number six qualities, you need to play Manu at number six and get Mason Mount in midfield from now to the end of the season. And then obviously we need to sign a replacement for Casemiro in the summer, but this just ain't working. McTominay hasn't been available in the last few games, and he ain't a perfect option either. We just cannot persist with Casemiro in midfield and Rashford in attack. There needs to be changes made. And this is another thing that the Ten Hag frustrates me with. Like, okay, Garnacho did not play particularly well in the first half yesterday, but he was involved in Bruno's first goal. And I know Garnacho did give the ball away as well. It's led to Solanke's goal. It's a very poor touch there. But he's been playing well for us lately. Why is it always him and Manu get picked on? Why are they always the first players off when they've been United's best performers? Yet the likes of Rashford, Casemiro, and Bruno, before his burst of goals recently, they were not being taken off when they should have been. The manager seems to find it easier to take young players off than the experienced players who are not playing well, and I don't like that. And what do you think, Rush?
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement there. I think that's what it is. And obviously, the stubbornness, man. Like, honestly, this season, what have we really got to play for apart from the FA Cup? I think we just need to, you know, just see it out. Some of those players might be feeling it as well, that they just want to see out this season and see what happens in the summer, because they will have questions as well.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of changes at United this summer. I think a lot of players will leave. A lot of players will come in. I think the coach and staff will change. And obviously, a lot of the directors are in the process of changing as well. So there's going to be a lot of upheaval at United this year.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll tell you what, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, like, I've not been Ten Hag out. I've always thought that, you know, with the right structure now changing above him, I was willing to give it a chance, you know, with a year remaining on his contract and see how it goes. But his stubbornness and naivety means that he could talk himself into a sacking if he keeps persisting with this. And I don't think he's going to change his ways. So, you know, it's unfortunate.
No, he definitely isn't, because as I've said, This is the way Ajax played under him, and he's going to persist with this regardless of who we sign. And I don't think that's a good way of playing in the Premier League. He consistently plays down the number of chances that United are conceding and the number of shots on goal. He doesn't see that as a big deal. He calls them low percentage shots from outside the area. I don't agree with that.
Whichever way you break it down, it doesn't make for good reading. And a club like ours, look at the conversations that we're in. When you look at the top five of goals shots conceded against you, and we're there with Luton, we're a Luton in the table. You know, it shouldn't be happening.
Luton in the relegation zone.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, and the only team that conceded more shots than us. It's a disgrace.
And 32 games into a 38 game season, and we have a goal difference of -1.
Yep.
Do you see, in my opinion, we're very lucky to even be seventh, given how badly we played. Now, we've lost 12 Premier League games, drawn 5 and won 15. A lot of those draws and wins have been very, very lucky, if I'm being brutally honest.
And I'll tell you what, Carl, I've just pulled up the rest of the list as well. So, shots faced. Number one is Luton on 576. We're second on the list with 574. The other three are Sheffield United, West Ham and Burnley. Sheffield United with 569, West Ham with 531, and Burnley with 514. So that is the top five that we're in. Now, you know, no disrespect to those clubs, but should we be in such conversations?
Definitely not. And I hope that the decision makers at the club are well aware of all this. But all they need to do is really be there in match days and see how bad and disjointed United are and make a decision based on that. They don't even need to look at the stats. Like I said, one win in 7 games. That's relegation form as well. This is... You know, we've talked about how since Radcliffe came in, the manager is effectively on trial. Well, United's form in the last number of weeks has just been as bad as it was in the autumn. And the timing couldn't be worse for the manager. He needed to have a strong finish to the season, and he's not doing that. We've got Sheffield United and Burnley next in the league, and you like to think we could beat those teams at Old Trafford. But apart from that, we could lose the rest of the games, because we've got Newcastle at home, who are obviously playing better than us. We've got Arsenal at home. We've got Palace away, which is always a tricky fixture, and then Brighton away. So conceivably, those two games against the relegation fodder might be the last two games we win this season in the league. I think we'll lose the rest of them, or draw them at least. I absolutely no faith in United qualifying for the Champions League. It's going to be pretty galling for United that in a season where possibly 5 teams could qualify for the Champions League through the league, and United are not one of them, even that itself is a damning indictment on the coach. And yeah, there's no way they're going to... There's a lot of United fans keep thinking that it's everybody else's fault and want to see how Ten Hag does under a new structure, but what we're seeing week in and week out is so abysmally bad that I just cannot see him surviving the summer. I mean, I can't see a scenario where they change every single director, an overhaul of the medical staff, big changes to the playing staff, and then just keep the manager who was appointed by the previous owners or the previous hierarchy. They're going to bring in their own man.
Yeah, and this is the thing. When we look at the history of like any kind of ownership change, usually they bring in their own guy. We saw it at Newcastle when they took over. Steve Bruce was dismissed. We've seen it at Chelsea, I think, when Roman first came in. Ranieri got a year and then he was dismissed. At Man City, even before these current guys came in, under the previous ownership, Tanzin Shinawatra, he brought in Sven. When these guys came in, they got rid of Sven and brought in Mark Hughes. We've seen this throughout the years. When ownership changes, generally speaking, it's the nail in the coffin for the manager.
Absolutely. And the only way for the manager to stay is if he just keeps winning games. And obviously yeah. he's not doing that.
He's not doing that. He's not giving them any reasons to believe. So, yeah, because that's the one thing. Even if the manager's philosophy didn't align with that of the new owners, if he was winning, then there wouldn't be too much they could say. But obviously now, you know, there probably wouldn't be that much opposition.
If United qualified for the Champions League and won the FA Cup, and even if the owners wanted to bring in their own man, they couldn't possibly do it.
Yeah.
They couldn't justify it. But they can easily justify sacking them now because of how bad United have been. And I actually think United's league form has been so poor that winning the FA Cup might not even be enough to save him. Wasn't enough to save Van Gaal, obviously, as everyone remembers. I don't see any way back for him now. I think we're going to continue to see these lackluster performances. And, you know, this is what is so frustrating about this team, that we've seen them get up for Liverpool games. They could quite conceivably get up for that Arsenal game, get a draw or a win out of it, and then go and lose to Palace. I just don't trust this team to be consistent at all. And every week you have to listen to the same guff that we'll have to pick ourselves up and go again next week. And you're like, but you should have done that this week. That's what you said last week. You said that last week. You should have been doing it this week. You know, we just get tired of hearing that from the players in their post-match interviews. They're just not a team. They're a team of individuals. They just don't look well coached at all. They don't seem to know what they're doing. They don't seem like they trust in what the manager is trying to do. It's just a complete mess, to be honest. And I want to come on to Diogo Dalot, right? I think it's fair to say that I'm not a fan and you're not his biggest fan either. But there's a lot of United fans out there who think this guy is marvellous. And some of them have even went as far as to say that he should be the Shermat Busby Player of the Year, which I find utterly laughable. He was absolutely horrendous at Stamford Bridge, and again yesterday. He plays everywhere except where he's supposed to play. He thinks he's prime Cafu, and he's nothing more than a mediocre player to me, and gets caught out so many times. He's not a good defender, and I don't think he's particularly great going forward either. And he just gets on my nerves the way he's constantly fist pumping people, high fiving people when they give away a corner. And yeah, I just think he's a really average player, yet so many United fans think he's absolutely brilliant. Can you get your head around that, Bruce?
You know what, when you're so used to mediocrity for so long, I think, you know, they just want a glimmer of hope in it. So the average then looks amazing in comparison. Like I've always said, I do think he's a good squad player, but he can be nothing more than that if we're serious.
He's not a serious player. I mean, we've heard that he's been practicing his shooting and his crossing in training and doing extra sessions on that. Well, for a player who spends more time in the opponent's box than his own box, he has scored 2 goals this season. One against Sheffield United, who are rock bottom. One against Wigan, who play in League One. So he hasn't really improved the shooting that much. He's had many, many efforts from outside the box that have been off target. Fulham.
One of the goals we did see him score, I thought, was somewhat fortunate.
Yeah, the one against Sheffield United, I think the keeper got a hand to it and probably should have kept it out. It wasn't right in the corner against Wigan. Yeah, that was a good goal. But really, I just don't think he's as good as what he thinks he is. His body language on his social media posts indicate that he really fancies himself as a player and sees himself being part of a successful United team. But to me, that just winds me up because I think he's just a mediocre player. I'm just not a fan of him at all. I've had arguments with people on social media about him.
Overall, I do think he's had a good season. I'll give him that.
Had a good season by his standards. I think it's
yes.
I think what happened, this happens at a lot of clubs, where if a really obvious player improves, mm-hmm. then fans get carried away into thinking that he's world class, which is, there's a big difference there. Like you say, I think fans are just clinging to some kind of hope. But to say that he's player of the year, come on. I mean, that has to be Garnacho or Manu, in my opinion.
It has to be Garnacho or Kobbie. I think those two are the standouts from this season. In an otherwise lackluster season, those have been the two bright spots.
So I have to say that there's been rumours that Anthony was not actually injured at all, and that he yes. and the manager had an argument over his lack of playing time. That's interesting. Hard to know what's true and what's not. The club have briefed that he was injured, but they will say that anyway. And then perhaps even more significant was what has happened with Alejandro Garnacho after he was substituted at halftime yesterday, and Ten Hag appeared to criticise him in his post-match interview. And since then, Garnacho liked posts from Mark Goldridge, which read, "Ten Hag subtly blaming Garnacho in the post-match press conference. Not a good look throwing a 19-year-old under the bus who was actually delivered for you this season. But then again, he's clearly scared of upsetting the bigger earners," which I've talked about already. "Garnacho has been one of our best players this season. Poor first half, but taking him off at halftime and holding him up as the problem is a joke. Many have done much worse week in, week out, and are still out there." And I agree with those statements. Clearly Garnacho did as well, because he liked those posts and then unliked them again when he realised what he had done. Garnacho is a 19-year-old. He's probably quite immature, and he will react when things don't
emotionally
go
away. Yeah,
he's emotionally immature, and we have to give him a bye ball, you know, whenever he does that. The problem is with Ten Hag is that he's a 53-year-old man, and I've lost count of the amount of players that he's fallen out with or had major disagreements with at United, and he just cannot afford that anymore. And I feel as if he's not dropping the high earners or the most senior players when they should be dropped, because he's afraid of getting into any more quarrels, because his position is so uncertain. But it seems like Garnacho and possibly Anthony now are in disagreement with the manager. Another reason why I can't see this continuing, it really is becoming an absolute mess of a football club. I mean, the dressing room couldn't be happy with all these results. What happens at clubs is, when things go wrong and you're losing games, you're not winning games, targets are not being met, then people will start to blame each other. No doubt that is happening here. The players will be blaming each other. The players are blaming the manager. The manager will blame the players. And I don't see any way back for this manager. So what have you made of the whole Garnacho and Anthony situations this weekend?
The Garnacho one, I think, yeah, you know, age plays a factor in that. The young man realizes his mistake and what he'd done. But obviously, you know, in this social media era, you know, it's, as soon as it's done, it's too late, isn't it? The digital imprint's out there. Everyone's taking screenshots as evidence and whatnot. So the damage is done. But yeah, you know, it's a lesson to learn from. As for Anthony, ultimately the manager decides who plays and who doesn't, right? I was actually quite surprised that he didn't play. I actually thought he's been one of the better players in recent weeks. So from his point of view, I can understand why he was annoyed. But if they had a spat, then, you know, ultimately you have to let the manager manage. It's his decision. So, you know, whether you agree with it or not, you still have to respect it, I guess.
To be brutally honest, if we had to make a choice between keeping Garnacho or keeping Ten Hag, it'd be Garnacho all day long at this present moment. Because he's got a wonderful future ahead of him, whereas Ten Hag to me is a dead duck. who is woefully out of his depth in the Premier League. So let's see how that one plays out. Could there be a situation where Garnacho doesn't play in the next game? I don't think the manager can't afford this anymore. That's what I'm saying. You know, in addition to falling out with a lot of people, there's a lot of injuries as well. If you look at United's bench yesterday, there's a lot of players that
a lot of kids.
Yeah, players that the fans haven't really heard of, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
We're down to partnering Maguire with a 19-year-old defender because that's all we've got.
Yeah,
the manager just cannot afford to be falling out with Anthony or Garnacho at this moment in time. It's just impossible for him to be able to offset them being out of the team. Yeah, there's just
absolutely, especially when we've seen from what little we've seen of the likes of Omari Pearson, you know, he's just not up to the standard, is he?
Oh, nowhere near it. And
yeah,
I couldn't believe that he was getting an opportunity ahead of Amad Diallo. That was absolutely disgraceful.
Again,
that's another thing. That tells me the manager doesn't know who good players from bad players, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm saying that Amari Fozan is a bad player, but
it's just that right now, at the stage of development, Amad is way further along. So
absolutely,
you know, it just doesn't make logical sense.
I mean, Amad is not only much more experienced, but a player with a lot more ability, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And his chances have been few and far between. He came on against Liverpool as a sub, and I mean, what he did there, he deserved to start the next game that you could start him in.
Yeah.
After the suspension, but I don't think he's featured until yesterday when he came on as a halftime sub, and even that really surprised me.
Yeah.
But I thought it should have been Rashford coming off and not Garnacho. As I say, the manager finds it easier to take young players off rather than the high earners.
And yeah.
That tells me that the manager is a bit afraid of upsetting the superstars in the team. And that's never a good position to be in as a manager. I just think this is slowly coming to an end for Ten Hag. It's like a stay of execution, really. And in my opinion, the only reason he's still there is because we're in the FA Cup. As soon as the FA Cup run ends, I think that'll be it all over. Of course, if they win against Coventry, the FA Cup final will be the last game of the season. And because we could conceivably finish 8th or 9th in the table, and that's not acceptable at all.
Yeah, absolutely not. Already a record number of defeats in the league this season. And you know, it shows how competitive the league is as well. Newcastle are ahead of us now on goal difference. You know, two teams in Aston Villa and Tottenham who are 10 points ahead. There's still some in the fan base who are delusional as well, I'd say, thinking that we can finish fifth or higher. How we make up a 10-point deficit on two teams with six games to go, you know, when we're getting outplayed by Bournemouth, I don't understand.
Yeah, but like I said, we're so poor at the moment that getting outplayed by Bournemouth was entirely predictable.
You know, and the most frustrating thing as well, when the teams above us, you know, drop points, we just can't capitalise.
No, I've absolutely no faith at all that we can capitalise now. We've seen yesterday Newcastle thump Spurs 4-0, and this has happened a lot with Spurs and Villa, but we've never been good enough to take advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And now Newcastle have leapfrogged us, and you know, West Ham are quite close to us as well now. I mean, if Chelsea win both their games in hand, they'll go above us as well. Could you imagine Manchester United finish below Chelsea in this Premier League season?
After the season they've had, where they've had one game a week as well, and they're terrible, terrible, terrible. I'm still pissed off about the game against them lot. You know, I don't know how we lost that. At least three of those goals could have been prevented. Chaos.
Absolutely.
And the fact that they went on after that and dropped points, was it at Sheffield United? Was it? I think it finished 2-2 last week. So, you know, everyone's taking points off them but us. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, absolutely embarrassing, really, to be honest.
Yeah.
And Yeah. Do you know this is the stage that we're at. This is pretty damning. See both Bruno goals yesterday. I didn't even jump out of my seat, which I would normally do.
Mm-hmm.
United have drained the enthusiasm out of me. In my opinion, the league season is a write-off and none of the results in the league matter anymore. And the only excitement left is the FA Cup. But here's the question. Will United players have the right attitude next week in Wembley when they're playing against Coventry?
Yeah, that's the thing. They need to. They need to bring their A game. There's no excuses. Absolutely none. And you can't take these games for granted. Like, you know, nothing's won on paper. You still have to turn up. You still have to do your job.
Yeah, Coventry lost 3-0 to Birmingham yesterday, but they're maybe putting all their eggs into the FA Cup basket now at the moment, I'd say.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough for them to make the playoffs. So maybe
Regardless of the difference in division or whatever, the magic of the cup, it gives everyone that little bit of a boost, you know. So yeah, their players will be firing to go. And this is what the FA Cup's all about. It's about the giant, you know, the killers, the upset.
Yeah, they'll not be quaking in their boots, you know, watching United at the moment. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, they're absolutely not. Absolutely not. They'll come and try to test us. I mean, whenever anyone thinks it's a foregone conclusion, I always have flashbacks to Portsmouth in 2008. But all people forget as well, that was an incredibly good team that we had. You know? And even they couldn't get the job done on a very freakish day. With these lot, anything's possible.
That was probably the most one-sided loss I've ever seen.
Ever. I mean, listen, I think Patrice hit the bar. Carrick had a shot cleared off the line. And then a jammy sending off out of nowhere. And Rio Ferdinand ended up in goal. It was crazy.
Did United have 30 shots in goal that day as well?
We were raining down shots. It was incredible. Just wouldn't go in.
Definitely should have been a penalty for Distan's charge on Ronaldo. I felt.
And it would have been Cardiff as well in that final. So, you know, by all means, the treble would have been on.
Yeah, we'll miss the opportunity there. But
yeah,
at the moment, we'll be happy with just the FA Cup.
Yeah.
The problem is, even if we do get over the line against Coventry,
it's going to be Chelsea or City.
Probably City.
I mean, we'll find out first, won't we? I think they play first, don't they?
That's right. Yeah, that's on Saturday.
So we'll find out who's in the final. So,
Now, Chelsea have done well against City this season.
Yeah.
But can they get over the line in extra time and penalties against City? I would probably doubt that. They've got two draws. They'll have to do more than just draw in this one, obviously. City tend to hit their stride and when it comes to the running at the end of the
business end of the season, isn't it? That's when they come alive. You know, they look a bit lackluster at times, but they get the job done. And that's what comes with experience.
Yeah, they've been there and done it so many times. And
yep.
The likelihood is if we get through, we're playing City in the final and we know what happened last year, you know. And the scoreline suggests that it was a close match, but in my opinion, it wasn't. They dominated possession and the chances and we looked off it. I felt as if Eriksen was way off the pace. Casemiro, that was the beginning, in my opinion, of Casemiro starting to look a wee bit off it in that final. And Thucker Nacho should have come on much earlier. We nearly equalised at the end with there was a goal mouse scramble and McTominay, I think, hit the crossbar with the header, but that might have been our only other chance, really, in the whole game.
We started that. Is there a worse way to start a game? I mean, when you're already on the back foot, 13 seconds in?
And then that reminds me of another United player who a lot of the fan base like that I don't, and that's Victor Lindelof, who headed the ball straight to Gundogan in that situation. I couldn't believe it that he scored after, 20 seconds or something? Mm-hmm. Absolutely atrocious. We cannot afford to start at Wembley in either of these games that way. I think Ellis Sims will be licking his lips given how badly United have been playing. And the Coventry manager, who of course is someone who has helped United massively in the past and helped Sir Alex Ferguson and keep his job, and Tim Robbins. If he famously scored that goal against Nottingham Forest that supposedly kept Fergie's job in 1990, he'll be looking at the way United's midfield is structured and will be looking to exploit that. I mean, everybody's doing it now. Everybody can see how easy United are to play through. And County will be looking to take advantage of that as well. See, United have now become predictable under Ten Hag, and there's another issue. I've got to admit that not only do I believe that he will be relieved of his duties at the end of the season, I actually want it to happen as well. You know, there seems to be a taboo in the United fan base that they don't want to say things like that, but I'll be open and honest and say that I do want him to leave.
My worry is, see, if you're, I'm never really in favor of sacking managers unless there's a plan. I need to see a clear plan. So, you know, if they do move in a different direction, as long as it's all planned out and they have a clear vision in mind, then I'll get behind it.
Well, so far they've had a plan for everything else. So
yeah,
don't see why they wouldn't have a plan for a new manager as well.
Definitely. I think the only thing that concerns me is that, you know, it's probably just paper talk, but some of the names we've been linked with, like Gareth Southgate, why? Like, do people not remember what he did as a club manager at Middlesbrough?
Yeah, we talked about this already. I'm not going to give it any more airtime unless it actually happens.
Yeah, see, so that kind of thing, I mean, yeah. If you're swapping him out for that, then I don't know, you know, so... That's why I'm sort of on the fence about just sacking. But yeah, if there's a clear plan, then, you know.
Yeah. So if you could choose someone who's realistic, who would it be?
So we've been linked with Southgate, De Zerbi and Potter. In terms of my shortlist, it would probably look a little bit more like this with Nagelsmann, Xabi Alonso, Simeone Inzaghi, and perhaps Ruben Amorim from Sporting, who would pretty much be fourth on that list. Xabi Alonso could win the Bundesliga today, actually. Leverkusen play later on.
Well, I wouldn't put him on the realistic list because he's committed his future to Leverkusen.
For another year, isn't it? Yeah.
And would probably go to Madrid or...
Probably Real Madrid after that, because Ancelotti will be leaving by then, so that, yeah. But these are the conversations we need to be in. And when I talk about long-term planning, you know, you need to look at these things. If there was a possibility, you know, you need to be in these conversations.
Yeah. If I had to pick one, it would probably be Simone Inzaghi, to be honest with you. But that would involve United playing 3-5-2, and you'll have to make major changes to their personnel. But I want major changes to the personnel anyway.
we would need to get some competent wing backs. Well, we'd have to get wing backs for a start, let alone competent.
Yeah. If we did bring in Inzaghi, the first signing to make would be Jeremy Frimpong right away.
Yeah.
And then that would be Dalot out of the team, and I'd be rubbing my hands together, thankfully.
We'd also definitely have to sign some centre halves as well. Because, you know, if you're playing a back three, I mean, the only one we ever have fully fit and available is Maguire these days. So, yeah.
Yeah, but I get the feeling that we're going to sign Jarrod Branthwaite from Everton, or at least make a big attempt to sign him anyway.
I like him as a player. My only concern is obviously, you know, he will come with English tax and all the rest of it. And if we overpay like we did for Maguire, we could be setting the kid up to fail. Because he's never going to be able to live up to that. I think he's a good talent, but you know, if you overpay for him, it's going to be another Anthony Maguire type situation.
Yeah, it's, you know, we can't do what we used to do in the past, where we can take the best players from the other Premier League teams. Like,
yeah,
we got, what did we get? Dwight York from Aston Villa for 19 million. If we went in for Ollie Watkins, it'd be 100 million. You know, that's how things have changed. Yeah. You know, the teams, well, Aston Villa are not lower in the table. We have to get that straight for a start. But the other Premier League teams don't need the money anymore because of the TV revenue.
Dwight at the time, I think, was about 12 and a half. But then this was a time when Shearer was the world record, at like, well, the Premier League record at like 15. So if people can make sense of it that way, it was still a significant sum at the time.
Yeah, it was very, very small in comparison to the sums we've seen now. I mean, you know,
what we
paid for Dwight York, who's like a proven goal scorer, is what we'd pay for Malassia nowadays. You know, that's how
Who nobody's seen this season. Apart from for the odd selfie, you know, well, we've seen that he's alive. No one knows where he is.
But I understand that the constant injury setbacks have now affected his mental health as well. And so that's understandable.
Psychologically, that must take a big impact on you.
People think that because they're multimillionaires that they're always happy.
Yeah.
But if you're not able to do, you're not able to work or do the job you love, it's going to affect your mental health, especially when football is such a short career as well.
Absolutely. And this is their livelihood as well, isn't it? So it must be quite anxiety inducing, you know, thinking, can I recover? Can I play? Like, you know, what happens if I don't? You know, you must have a lot of doubts.
Yeah. Not that I think he's the greatest player in the world anyway. I don't think he's...
Nope.
You know, what we've missed is having an actual left back. We haven't missed him per se, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And again, with him, like, my expectations weren't that great. I just thought, you know, this is going to be a squad player, rotational. But yeah, you need to be available first and foremost. And Luke Shaw, again, you know, the serious, serious injury that he had. He's lucky to even be walking, let alone playing football. You know, and we've probably needed to replace him for some years.
So we're going to have to sign a left back this summer, which we've been told by Fabrizio Romano, United are going to prioritise that. But if it's Simone Inzaghi, it'll have to be a left wing back we'll have to prioritise. But definitely we need a player down that side, because you cannot go most of a season without a left-footed left back. That's really hampered us. And I don't understand why Ten Hag does not play Wan-Bissaka right back and Dalot a left back, because Dalot is accustomed to playing left back. Wan-Bissaka is not.
He can do both. He can do both. Whereas Wambi, he looks very uncomfortable, doesn't he? You can tell he's getting his bearings wrong when he's going in for like challenges and everything when he's on that side.
Yeah. We've 90 minutes played now at Anfield, and Palace are still 1-0 up.
Listen, let's not start looking at it just yet, because I remember what happened at Boris. It was, 90 plus 9 minutes added on. And with the last kick of the game, Nunes scored that chip. So, until it's over, I'm not saying anything.
I can imagine the fourth official is getting an earful from Jurgen Klopp this afternoon.
You know,
every fourth official ever feels Klopp's moist breath in his face. And today things are not going well. That would be the end of their title charge, basically, if they lose this game. You know, given how tight it is and how little points are being dropped.
Yeah. Every point counts for the top three this season. So tight.
And as you know, Gary Neville has been saying in the last few years that when he was a footballer, all the teams in the title race would drop points in the running. But Man City's runnings are usually absolutely perfect. So he cannot afford to even draw a match.
Yeah. So it's different level, isn't it? Because their idea of dropping points now is so few. Like the levels are ridiculous. I hardly remember it sort of in the early 2010s between Barcelona and Jose's Real Madrid, where it was that competitive. Where I think there was that one season where I think Jose went like 98 points or something and still didn't win the league, which just shows the levels.
Yeah, unbelievable. The Liverpool accumulated 98 points and didn't win the league. Not that I'm sad about it. So let the fun begin with the player ratings.
This should be interesting.
Andre Onana, for me, I primed a hair, but saved at least one of those yesterday, in my opinion. He was getting beat at his near post. Doesn't get down quick enough. You know, we're used to much better than this. We used to a goalkeeper with the reflexes of a cat. And he's a bit more cumbersome, really. And
it's because we were used to having goalkeepers who are good at football, goalkeeping fundamentals.
Yeah.
Whereas like this guy is not that.
You know, there's a lot of fans who are more delighted with the form of Onana since January the 1st. Mm-hmm. But I am still not convinced. Are you?
Yeah. So I think it's a thing where, listen, with a settled back four, I do think we'll see slightly better performances. But like I've always said, this keeper he doesn't fill me with confidence.
No, he doesn't. I'm still, the jury's
out
for me.
He's never too far away from a calamity. But I will give him his credit, though. He has turned it around and he has improved. And I do think with a settled back four, we would see better overall defensive performances. And he's not had that. And somebody put up some stats on the timeline earlier this week. And I was seeing that we've had more than 30 different back four combinations this season. And that's ridiculous. You can't build any kind of consistency out of that.
No, definitely not. But I find it ironic that in a season where Ten Hag doesn't mind United conceding 20 or 30 shots, he replaces De Gea with Onana. It would have made more sense this season to have De Gea in nets with all the shots raining down on United. You know?
And talking of Dave, I mean, I don't know if he's retired. Like, he's still not found a club. He's effectively just taken the whole year off.
Yeah, but when you've got so much money in the bank, you can afford to take a year off.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but you think, like you say, you know, your career is pretty short, in perspective. And he's still, what, only 32 going on 33?
It is a short career, but for a goalkeeper, it's longer.
Yeah, I mean, you can play till you're like 40, in your 40s. Buffon, I think, only retired last season, didn't he? And he was like mid-40s.
Yeah. De Gea could still come back and play for another 7 years, conceivably.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Yeah, so Onana would get a 4 for me yesterday. Diogo Dalo would get a 1. I thought he was terrible on the day. Willie Kambala, I give him a 4. He didn't have a good day, but I'm not going to blame it on him. He's only a young player making his third start. And I think the slip was pretty unlucky as well for the first goal. Harry Maguire being probably one of our more consistent performers recently. If I'm going to be overcritical of him, when Kambala slipped, he should have went straight to Solanke rather than focusing on the other guy. I think Martinez just goes straight to Solanke and tries to make a challenge and takes that bold risk, whereas Maguire was caught in two minds and didn't know what to do, and then Solanke just got a free shot away. But I'm not blaming Maguire for the goal by any means before anyone accuses me.
It's very hard as well to build any kind of understanding and partnership, you know, because they've not had the chance, have they?
Yeah. So Maguire at 5. Wan-Bissaka just constantly played out of position. Just looks absolutely lost out there. And yeah, especially as he's a right-footed player playing a left-back. It's a tough old job, and you can't properly judge him unless he's at right-back. But it'd be another 4, to be honest. Garnacho subbed at half-time. A bit unlucky, considering I think Rashford was worse on him, and Garnacho, I suppose both of them actually played a role in the goal in the first half. But I think, as I said, Ten Hag often picks on the younger players when he makes substitutions. And so Garnacho, I give him a 5. Casemiro, absolutely invisible again. And it's becoming a huge concern. I don't think he'll be here next season. And Casemiro would get a 2 out of 10. Kobbie Mainoo, not his most effective game for United, but when you're playing in such a dysfunctional side, it's hard, you know. You know, when you're a 19-year-old, or he just turned 19, I think, or he will do in this month, and he's expected to be the spark for United, that's really unfair. He can't do that in every game at his age.
Definitely.
Like, he's playing so much better than all the experienced players, but he can't do it every week. So it'd be a 5 for Mainoo. Bruno Fernandes, now, like with so many times with Bruno, it's such an up and down performance. Like, he scored a good goal with his left foot from the edge of the 6-yard area. Good finish. He obviously tucked away his penalty, and he had a rasper from outside the area which hit the crossbar.
Yeah,
but outside of that, I don't think he had a good game. But mm-hmm. he does this often. But I don't mind as long as he's contributing. On
in some way,
it's been far too many. There's far too many games this season where he has not been contributing at all. But he scored in each of the last 3 games now, and that's 4 goals in 3 matches. So I'll give him a 7. Marcus Rashford, just another 1 out of 10. You know, just a player that needs dropped. I mean, any other team and any other manager would have him dropped a long time ago. Even when he did take him out of the team against Chelsea, he just tried to say it was rotation. When it was the same team apart from that. You know, it's not rotation when you're just making one change. You know, mm-hmm. and then he brought him straight back in against Liverpool. So, yeah, he's a player that looked a shadow of the player from last season. Poor old Hoyland doesn't get any service whatsoever.
None.
When he was, before his injury, when he was in confident mood and he was scoring in almost every game, he was creating chances for himself. And, you know, he's not been able to do that at the moment, but primarily a number 9 should be relying on some service, which he gets none. Yeah. And the manager just isn't setting the team up to get the best out of Hoyland. You know, I think playing inverted wingers who want to shoot all the time is not really getting the best out of your number 9.
No.
So I give him his usual 5, but it's not really his fault, to be honest. So only 2 substitutions were made. 1 at half time, Ahmad didn't really do much, to be honest, but he has been bright for United in the appearances he has made this season. Of course, the most obvious one being Liverpool in the FA Cup. I want to see more of him. We'll give him a 5 yesterday for his 45 minutes. He had a right-footed shot that he absolutely sliced into the stands, unfortunately. A couple of bright moments from him, but not enough. But that definitely deserves more game time. And Mason Mount, 78 minutes it took to bring him on. And then he brings off Kobbie Mainoo. I didn't understand that. It wasn't long enough to give him my rating, really. But he has looked really good in the cameos that he's had. Of course, the most obvious one being when he scored against Brentford. And he actually played really well when he came on against Chelsea, his old team. And he should be starting games now. In my opinion, given how many players who are out of form, Mason Mount should start at Wembley against Coventry.
Absolutely. And he needed minutes. We're treating him like Donny van der Beek. Why? You know, you can't play yourself into form with these little cameos.
My only theory is that he's being careful because of the amount of injuries he's had this season, that he doesn't want to play him too much too soon.
But then I've seen the way we've treated like Lissandro and rushed him back repeatedly. So yeah, why? You know, why is it different for him and nobody else?
Yeah. He made his first appearance from injury in extra time against Liverpool in the FA Cup. That was a month ago. And he hasn't started a game.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? You'd think in that time it would at least start once. at the very
and least. And he hasn't.
The
manager needs to be brave and make changes. Like, yeah. The definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Mm-hmm.
And Ten Hag would get a 1 out of 10 for yesterday as well, I'm afraid. I mean, coming increasingly fed up with the coach's decisions. So the league season is petering out. We are currently on 50 points, and that is 10 points off Aston Villa, yep, and Spurs in fifth place. And we've only got 6 games left. I do not see us making up that ground, even on fifth place.
And even by some miracle, if we were to match them points wise, the goal difference would mean that, you know, it's another uphill struggle.
Yeah, definitely. It's worth an extra point to those sides.
yeah.
We would be in 8th today if West Ham hadn't lost at home to Fulham. West Ham is so up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Andres Pereira actually scored twice in that game. And Liverpool have lost at home to Crystal Palace.
They have. It's confirmed.
So
fantastic. Wow.
Finally, some good news this weekend.
Yeah, that's a huge result. Wow.
Yeah, that probably knocks him out of the title race, given how City.
I think Arsenal play later on, right? I think if Arsenal win, they go top. I think City are currently top of the league. Interesting.
Yeah, that is an unexpected surprise, I have to say. But you know, Crystal Palace do have history for causing upsets against Liverpool, most famously in 2014, Chris Stamboul.
Dwight Gale. Oh, it was brilliant stuff. So that was the SAS season, wasn't it? When they had Suarez and Sturridge on fire. What a game that was, though. I think, yeah, it was quite stunning.
I bet you there was a few United fans who had Dwight Gale on the back of their United shirt after that.
Cult hero. He earned Diego Forlan status without even playing for us that day.
Yeah. There was definitely United fans who had Slippy D on the back of their shirts. So it looks like the quadruple is going up in flames. So they're 3-0 down to Atlanta in the Europa League. They've been knocked out of the FA Cup by us. And the title is looking increasingly unlikely. So
they
might only just win the League Cup this season after all.
And have an open bus stop parade.
Do you know what's even better about them losing 3-0 to Atlanta at Anfield? A lot of Liverpool fans were booking their flights to Dublin for the final and saying how it's going to be a Liverpool invasion in Dublin.
Yeah.
And they're going to paint Dublin red and all this crap. You know, like, but that is just typical Liverpool arrogance. And they are now eating a bowl of their own stink. I don't see a scenario where they go to Bergamo and win 4-0. You know, in the past, they've had the home leg second and they've been able to turn it around after a heavy defeat in the first leg. But this is the away leg. I mean, if Atlanta score early, the tie is over. But Leverkusen got to be heavy favourites for that tournament. They're 2-0 up against West Ham.
They're the favourites.
And they're going to win the Bundesliga today, probably.
Yeah, if they win today, they wrap up the league. So, yeah, and still undefeated, by the way. So, yeah, incredible stuff.
And they'll be no longer referred to as Bayer Leverkusen, which they
Because what a season that was in 2002, where they did the treble of finishing runners-up. Lost the German Cup final, lost the Champions League final, and missed out on the league title as well. Terrible.
The nearly treble.
The nearly treble. Yeah, it's heartbreaking stuff. And that was probably their most successful season in recent history. Before this one,
I'm hoping that we can get a couple of their players in the summer because it's going to be the vultures are going to be circling without a doubt.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And anytime there's one of these up and comers, you only have to look at Monaco in 2017 and what happened to them. You know, they got ripped apart from Mbappe to Bernardo Silva to Mendy to Bakayoko, everyone. Fabinho, Thomas Lamar.
Yeah, they were an amazing team. And this Bayer Leverkusen team is going to be similar. Now,
yeah.
It's going to be really hard for Alonso to repeat this next season after he loses so many players, probably.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, I think in that league, it's such a big thing if you win the league and you're not Bayern Munich that, you know, even one league title in 2 years will be more than enough.
It's massive.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge.
Because nobody else has won the league since 2012 when Klopp was Dortmund manager.
Yeah. And Dortmund really should have won it last season as well. They fumbled it on the last day of the season.
At home to Mainz. Yeah.
Yeah. They drew a game they should have won. And then I was watching the run-up to that, actually. And there was one game where the referee just didn't give a blatant penalty. Should have been a penalty, but he didn't give it. And I think that match finished a draw.
Yeah, they only had to win at home to Mainz on the last day to win the title, and they didn't even manage that.
And they fumbled it. I think they conceded two, I think, and then it finished 2-2. They equalised with the last kick of the game. That must have been a kick in the teeth as well. At that point, I would have just been pissed.
Yeah, you would be. I think everybody wanted them to win because Bayern dominated that league, but they blew it. But Bayern weren't even in the title race this season. That's how one said it was. But speaking of Germany, Jadon Sancho has been doing relatively well for Dortmund recently, so that helps us get a fee for him in the summer.
It does indeed. I don't know if it will be to Dortmund permanently. I don't really mind where, to be honest. Whoever gives us the most money.
Yeah, definitely. But it could be a fee as low as 30 million, really. And we'll just have to accept that. His wages are astronomical. And I think the way they can offset that is if, for example, Dortmund buy him, what they'll have to do is give him a smaller wage but a longer contract, and that kind of offsets it then, you know, and then he'll probably agree to it. But I don't see United getting any more than 30 million for him, and that's going to be a huge loss because we paid 73 million for him. But, you know, his value wasn't going to go upwards, like, given how badly he's played for United.
Yeah, definitely.
So we'll leave it there for today. Hopefully United get to the FA Cup final at Wembley next Sunday at 3:30.
It kind of takes a little bit away from the final because the semi-final is Wembley as well now, isn't it? So.
It used to be Villa Park and Old Trafford, and it was Hillsborough before that. It's all about paying for Wembley, basically. So if we got a handpicked a semi-final, this would have been it. So if United don't get through this...
Yeah, absolutely. We'll never get a more straightforward route to the final. So no excuses, really.
Yeah, and as I say, if we don't make it to the final, I think that the manager will have managed his last game. You know, I could see a scenario where he's sacked on the spot and Steve McLaren takes charge of the rest of the season. The Wally with a Brolly. You know, I was just thinking yesterday, you get fed up looking at Ten Hag and Mitchell van der Gaag on the sideline, but you just think of Steve McLaren. He's yesterday's man. What is he doing there at Manchester United? I mean, he was our first team coach.
He was assistant as well. 1999.
A quarter of a century ago.
Before he got the Middlesbrough job, he was assistant.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a lot of ups and downs.
I think the main reason he's there is because of his time. I think was it FC 20 he was at in Holland.
So maybe he was the manager
because of his time.
Ten Hag was actually his assistant at FC 20.
So it's from that relationship, isn't it?
So it's the other way around now. Clearly, what any of them are bringing to the table is not enough. One thing one person we can't blame anymore is Aaron Ramsey, the set pieces coach, because he's gone to Minnesota United. So whenever we concede from a corner, we can't look at him anymore.
Yeah.
But apparently, since last season, he wasn't responsible for set pieces anymore. Anyway.
Okay.
Ten Hag has been taking more of a hands-on role. That is according to the MEN.
With no discernible difference.
Not at all. We don't score from set pieces, and we concede plenty. And the other thing that's frustrated me about United for years, and this predates Ten Hag, is we never win a 50-50 challenge.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure it happens the odd time, but it's few and far between. We either pull out of challenges or we just lose the 50-50 challenge. And it just really frustrates me. That's another thing that Rashford does. Just pulls out of challenges because he doesn't want to get injured. There's a few other players who do that as well. And it's cowardly to do that, you know. I want to see players being fully committed. Like Martinez. No, he doesn't care if he gets injured or not. I know, unfortunately, he does get injured, impact injuries and stuff, but he's absolutely full-blooded, isn't he? He throws himself into challenges.
We've missed him this season so badly.
Yeah, but unfortunately, we can't.
Yeah, were you going to say we can't rush him back?
We can't rely on him anymore.
Well, yeah. What annoyed me as well is that in the brief cameos when he did come back before getting injured again, you saw the difference he makes.
Yeah, absolutely. In that January, February period, United started to play a lot better. If you think of that first half against Wolves, United absolutely dominated that first half, created so many chances. I think that is what Ten Hag intends to see every week, but those performances are few and far between. Even in that game, we nearly threw it away. We needed a 97th minute winner from Manu to win that game after dominating for most of it. So I remember last season against Tottenham, 2-0 at Old Trafford. That was almost the perfect performance. But these performances are so few and far between under Ten Hag. The way he wants to play only happens about once every 6 months. And quite often, not for 90 minutes either. But please, everybody, like, share and subscribe to the podcast if you're enjoying it. And Brish, it's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah, I'll catch you next time. Take care.
And I shall see everyone again after the cup final.